No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is 93.7 The Ticket.
Look at me short. Look at me short. I'm the captain now.
Three-time national champion, Vershawn Jackson.
Oh, I got a bunch. All alone is Vershawn Jackson. And Vershawn, he'll get it to the 24-yard line.
Coming at you live from the Copples Chevrolet GMC studios in the heart of Lincoln, America. On air and online at theticketfm.com. Here he is, Vershawn Jackson.
We're back, Captain the Ticket, 93.7, TyroneBird.com. If you need some insurance, TyroneBird.com. That's Bird with a Y, not an I. And we talking any type of insurance, life insurance, medical insurance, health insurance, business insurance, you name it, he's got it. TyroneBird.com, Bird with the Y. He's practicing in Arizona, Colorado, and Nebraska. Pretty good, right, Coach?
There you go.
So, Coach, you are to me the king of one-liners and the king of just making statements that come true. You got any one-liners for me?
Not right now. You put me on the spot. Yeah.
Work hard, stay focused.
Well, that's okay. Sure.
The essence of teamwork is servanthood.
Yeah. Well, I think the most important type of leadership is servant leadership. You know, where anyone who would be greatest among you should be the servant of all, and it's kind of rare in our culture today. Most of it's more me first, and that's a little bit unfortunate. Saw that in politics a lot. Mm. A lot of dysfunction because of it, you know.
So. Yeah. I learned over time that the more pressure I was under, the less I could afford to ignore my spiritual life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's true.
Mm-hmm. I've got a lot. I wrote a bunch down. My hardest job is to convince the people of Nebraska that 10-1 is not a losing season.
Well, I would say that's an authentic quote, yes.
Know how to win and how to lose and be able to handle adversity.
Well, I think that's also good because adversity is a great teacher. And you know, usually when you're winning, you're not going to change much. Mm. Everything's flowing along pretty well. But when you really encounter adversity, then everything's on the table. And you begin to really examine your life and examine what you've been doing and what you haven't been doing. And that's when sometimes the most meaningful changes occur in your life, is when things really get tough. And unfortunately, life has a lot of adversity. And we always think of it's unfortunate, but in some ways it's fortunate because that's when the greatest things often are done.
If you were coaching in this climate with the NIL, with the transfer portal, how would you handle this situation now?
Well, it would be difficult. I think that a lot goes back to how you treat players, and if they know you care about them, if you can develop a culture on your team where there's a lot of mutual caring, willingness to sacrifice for each other. And some of the great teams we had, I felt that players were really willing to sacrifice personal ambition for the welfare of the team. Good example of that would be, I remember in 1994-1995, we were undefeated 2 years, won national championships, and then 96, we ended up 11-2, and we had Jason Peter and Grant Wistrom on our team that year, and they were really good players and All-Americans, and most people had them projected as being first-round picks. And I remember they came in to see me, and I thought, well, I'm going to hear the speech. Got to do what's best for me and my family. And they said, well, you know, Coach, we were 11-2 this year. I said, yeah, I noticed that. And they said, well, we didn't think that was good enough. And I said, well, I agree. He said, well, we're going to come back and we're going to win them all. And so those guys were eligible for the draft. Probably would have been first-round picks. And at that time, they could probably sign their name for $10 or $12 million, which in those days, in those dollars, be worth $20 million today. Mm. Pretty well set for life. But they came back, and you know, they could have been hurt and maybe not had that same opportunity another year. But those guys were very instrumental. They set the culture. Now, everybody said it, but the point was that it wasn't about them. It was about Nebraska football being good. And that was kind of a pervasive attitude among many of those teams, where it was a bigger deal to have that team success. And I think that's really a hard thing. It's hard to create that culture. And I can't say that I, as a coach, did that. Mm. The players did it. We all did it. But there were certain things in place that somehow caused that climate to create itself. And if you can ever do that, and it's probably harder today than ever because of NIL money. Mm-hmm. For instance, let's say that if you look at a team, the people that are going to make most of the money will be a quarterback, maybe a receiver, maybe a running back, maybe a linebacker. But the offensive line, those guys are critical. Mm-hmm. And how many of those guys are going to make a lot of money? Not very many. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be some defensive linemen and some kicking specialists that aren't going to make any money. What's that do to your locker room? You know, mm-hmm. I mean... And
dang, I didn't think about that.
And I wrote a letter to a committee that was formulating the rules. And I said, you know, what you ought to do is you take all the NIL money and you pool it. And the individual who was getting the contract, maybe he gets 50%, but the other 50% goes to everybody. And in an NFL locker room, you have some people are getting paid a lot of money, but everybody's getting a fairly good distribution. Mm-hmm. And I think that would make a lot more sense than to have maybe one-fourth of your team, or not one-fourth, maybe one-tenth of your team getting almost all the money. Mm. And everybody else not. And because everybody's got to pay a price to move that ball down the field or to stop the opponent. And, mm-hmm. It isn't a one-man proposition.
Michigan, we tied. You were talking about, you know, Jason coming back, Grant coming back. We were a senior-heavy team, 23 seniors on that 97 football team. Could Michigan beat us? What would have happened if we would have played Michigan for the championship?
Well, I don't want to sound self-serving here, but I will point out just a few things. We played Tennessee with Peyton Manning at quarterback, Their running back was a first-round pick. Peerless Bryce was first-round pick. I think they had about five first-round picks on that team. And we beat them fairly handily by about three and a half touchdowns, something like that. And on the other hand, Washington State came pretty close. I think it was a 5-6 point game, Michigan. And we played an extra game. We went down San Antonio and played A&M, who had won the South Division, and beat them by 3 or 4 touchdowns. And I don't like to get gambling into it, but the gamblers said they were, we would have been favored in the game. I did everything I could to play Michigan, but I even wrote to the commissioner and said, you know, you ought to have the two undefeated teams play. And they said, well, we have this contract with the Rose Bowl, and we can't get out of it or whatever, didn't want to. And so we couldn't play them. But anyway, we played a very good team and beat them pretty soundly. So who knows who would have won, but I think that if you look at the overall picture, I think the thing that hurt us was a close game at Missouri, you know. And but we made Matt Davison famous for life.
One catch?
Yeah.
He's a living legend on one catch?
Yeah.
Shout out to Matt Davison.
That's right.
Coach, when you think about life now, 85, just had a birthday, what, of all the things you've ever done in life, what makes Coach Osborne go now?
Well, I guess not one thing makes you go, but I'm still working with teammates every day, and probably the biggest challenge we have is recruiting mentors, because we always have about a third more kids who want a mentor than we have mentors, and I think the people have the wrong idea. They always think, well, if I'm a mentor, I'm sacrificing my time, and it's going to be somewhat of a burden. And but we've, almost all of the mentors we talk to who've been at it for a period of time will tell you that they get as much or more out of it than the mentee. Because I think if you do something for somebody who, on the surface of it, can't do anything for you in return, it has a meaning, a dimension of meaning and purpose to your life that you won't find in any other way. And so I'm mentoring two kids right now.
Oh, Coach, you still mentoring?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And I mentored one young guy for 13 years, and he had some difficult circumstances. I've mentored 5 or 6 kids over, and most of them for 5, 6, 7 years. And but those people are now close to me. Some of them have gone on to other things, but I've learned something from each one of them. And I think most people don't realize what kids are going through today. And because right now, today, in our country, 40% of our children are born outside of marriage. And most of those kids are probably going to be living below the poverty line and with a single parent or no parents. And that really concerns me, because back in the 60s, that percentage was 3.8%. 3.8% versus 40%. And over half of our kids are growing up without both biological parents today. And that would have been less than 10% back in those days. So I think what's happening to our young people is probably the greatest concern. It isn't Russia invading Ukraine, and that's a big deal. It isn't the economy. It isn't the southern border. It's and those things are all concerns. That's what's happening to our young people. Because if you read the paper every day and you see gang activity, you see...
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Gun violence, you see other things happening. It's almost always kids that have been let down in some way and haven't had adequate relationships in their lives. And that's one thing that a mentor can do.
Mm-hmm. 60-3, you won 60 games, you lost 3, you won 3 national championships. Now, there's some people that want me to ask you about the two-point conversion, because the old coach in me tried to say, if you win a championship, would you do it? I know as far as 1984, if you had it to do over again, you probably would have done it again, right? Just a different
probably,
play call?
Probably.
Maybe a different play call? Or the same play call?
Not really.
Really? You know, I mean, because we could have caught it.
Well, as you know, when at the end of the season you play a bowl game, you look at all of those films of those games, and we're pretty sure that they'd be in man-to-man defense on a two-point situation. And so we moved our halfback, Jeff Smith. Mike Rozier had gotten hurt and moved Jeff up to kind of a wing position, ran him to the flat, put our wide receiver and Irving Fryer on a slant inside, which kind of cleared things out to the flat. We felt we'd have a linebacker running with Jeff. And that's what happened. And Turner Gill rolled out, and Turner was a tremendously accurate guy, even on the run. And the ball was thrown just a little bit behind, and a guy came off his receiver and lunged and got a fingertip on the ball. And I'd say probably 4 out of 5 times we complete that pass and win the game. But I didn't know what was going on over in the Sugar Bowl. You know, Georgia was a pretty good team, and I didn't know how people were going to vote. And I felt in order to win a national championship, you had to win the game. Mm-hmm. I just assumed that was the way it was. And, of course, after the fact, people say, well, if you kicked a point, you'd have won. I'm not sure if I would have voted number one a team that had settled for a tie. Because I had a vote. I wouldn't vote for a team that settled for a tie. So, anyway, that's what we did. But we came close. We lost Mike Rozier during the game, and they jumped out to, I don't know what it was, 17-0 lead. And we kind of battled back and got back into the game. 93, we played well enough to beat Florida State.
Oh, yeah.
And probably there's some things that happened in that game that were leaving me shaking my head. We had a 80-yard punt return by Corey Dixon, and nobody touched anybody where you could remotely say there was a clip. It was a phantom. And then they fumbled the ball at the one, and were given a touchdown. And you know, Bobby Bowden's a good friend of mine. And I'm glad Bobby won a championship. You know, he won another one after that. But he's a good friend. But he told me that some pretty strange things happened that game. But I always took a great deal of satisfaction in how you played. And in that 84 game, 85 Orange Bowl, it was January. But we played hard and we played well and we came back in the game and put ourselves in position to win in the same way in 93. We probably were a little unlucky in 93. not to win that game. But we were probably a little bit lucky in 97 because of the Missouri game.
Because of Missouri.
Yeah. But people still, some of the sports writers felt it was a loss. So anyway. But, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Yes, sir.
Coach, you have a 2-0 record against Nick Saban, and I'd like to say you have a pretty good eye for talent. When you played him that last time in 96, I mean, you probably couldn't have guessed that he'd become, you know, what he is today, but could you see like he was a really talented young coach?
Well, I thought he was. I didn't know that time, but I know he was really disappointed up at Michigan State. We had beaten him pretty good. But I told him after the game, I said, Nick, I said, we've really got a good team. And don't feel bad about your team, because this is really probably the best team I ever coached. And I went down and spoke at their coaches' clinic. I don't know when it was. He'd been at Alabama for a couple of years. And I talked to him. I talked to the coaches there about the process, you know, that we didn't really talk a whole lot about winning or losing. Talked about the process, what you did on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday. And I don't know if that's where Nick got it from or not, but Nick always talks about the process. And he's right, you know. You can't give a pep talk and all of a sudden win a game. You know, when 15 minutes before you go on the field, the players are... they're not thinking about what you're saying, but you can get the word across and teach things on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. If you practice the right things with the right intensity frequently enough, and you continue to do that day after day after day, that's the thing that makes for a successful program. And I got that. This isn't something I came up with. John Wooden, the basketball coach, told me that a long time ago. And John won 10 national championships in 12 years. And he emphasized the process. First practice, he showed players how to put their socks on so they didn't get wrinkles and get blisters. And then how to bend your knees on a free throw and how to pass the ball and all of the fundamentals. And he said the same thing. He said, it's if you teach the right things well enough, frequently enough, with the right intensity, you don't ever have to talk about winning or losing, because the winning and losing takes care of itself. And that's the way I always believed, and it was sound advice from John Wooden.
Coach, you always said, make sure that you treat everybody in the university fair. I mean, make sure that you know the janitor to the guy that was, you know, cleaning the locker room. Why was that so important to you, that we treated everybody with respect?
Well, there's a principle of the 99 and the 1, and what that means is the way the 1 is treated affects the 99. I remember one time I was with the 49ers, and our coach one day said we were going to play the Packers, and the Packers were a really good team at that time. He said, you know, their center, Jim Ringo, was an all-pro player. He said, we know he's got a bad knee. We don't know which one it is. So when he lines up to deep snap on a punt as a center, we're going to put a guy on each shoulder, and we're going to go after both knees. Mm. And they did. I remember they carried Jim Ringo off on a stretcher. And I remember how I felt about that. You know, I didn't know Jim Ringo. He went on our team. But I thought, you know, if that coach would do that to Jim Ringo, when push came to shove, he wasn't going to worry about me or anybody else on his team. Mm. And so how you treat the secretary, how you treat the janitor, how you treat the lowest walk-on on your team, the scout team player, affects everybody, you know. We felt that was important, that everybody had a role to play, and that everybody had to understand their role, and that they needed to be appreciated and recognized. So, you know, we had a scout team player of the week and all those kind of things. And everybody, I think, felt valued. And when you talk about creating a culture, I think if people feel valued, if they understand what they're supposed to do, they understand their role, they're a lot more apt to buy into the fact that it isn't all about them. Mm-hmm. It's about everybody. And if you can create that culture, then you've got a chance, even with NIL and even with all the other things going on in college athletics today, you know. But it's really difficult. I hope people realize that coaching today has got a lot of roadblocks.
Mm-hmm. How important was, you know, scouting to what we did?
Mm-hmm. Well, they were critical because the more accurate you could see in practice what the other team was going to do, the better prepared you were. And we were really fortunate because we had those walk-on players, and some of them were walk-on players, some of them were scholarship players or on the scout team. But those guys really laid it on the line. And when Scott Frost transferred back from Stanford, he was on the scout team.
Mm-hmm.
And he was against Christian Peter and Jason Peter and Grant Wistrom and those guys. And they weren't easy on him,
mm-mm,
you know. But Scott won their respect because he took his lumps and he did the best he could there. And so we always had good scout teams. And that made us a lot better on Saturday afternoon.
You know, I was going to have Jock Allen call in, the greatest scout team player ever. Well, I figured that might be too much fun if we had Jock call in.
Well, I always enjoyed talking to Jock. And he was a genuine free spirit.
Right, right. So, Coach, if you can, we can get ready to end this. Coach Osborne's got to get ready to go. But if you had something that you wanted to say to the Ticket fans, to Husker fans, just about moving forward with the football team, what would it be?
Well, I just hope that we continue to have the fan support we've had. And, you know, it's gotten more difficult because, you know, a lot of young people in the stadium, they want to be able to have social media and be entertained and all that type thing. And the older people like me, they're dying off or not able to go to the games anymore. So I hope we continue to have a strong fan base because that has been the one thread that has really held this thing together, been the one constant over all these years. And I want to thank those fans for their loyalty and just hope that they continue to see it through. There have been a lot of changes made now with the football program, and let's hope for the best. I would assume that we'll see some results, and certainly hope so.
Yeah, I do too. Give me your best Go Big Red, Coach.
I'm not a good cheerleader. You know that. You got the voice for it. I got a voice that all beat up. I'm 85 years old.
So. Coach, you still in shape though. You look good, man, and it's amazing. Thank you for offering me a scholarship. Thank you for sticking with me, even though sometimes, you know, I had some issues and problems, but you never gave up on me. You always encouraged me, so I appreciate
it. Well, thank you for being a good blocker and for not moaning and groaning around because we didn't throw you 100 passes.
Well, so. It felt good to me when I knew I was in the game and Amon just went for 60 or somebody had got in the game and went for big yardage. It felt good that I knew I was a part of that. You know, when I go back and watch that.
Well, so. You're a big part of it.
Well, I appreciate that, Coach. And Coach, man, you make sure that you come back and see us. We want to continue to help our teammates in any way we can. Teammates.org.
That's right.
If you want to become a teammate, we need about 100 of you guys to step up to the plate, help a young mind out, help somebody like myself that needs just a little bit of help, just a little bit of bump. Coach, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rashawn.
TyroneBird.com with Coach Osborne. The Ticket, 93.7, The Captain. Thank you.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.